Chapter 2. The Jade Princess and Crazy Bear. Meanwhile, the night before in Cancun, Mexico. The man in the rental Fiat 500 swore loudly as his broad foot mashed the tiny brake and accelerator pedals, stalling the tiny car for the umpteenth time. It might be a little easier to drive this miniature vehicle if I could sit on the back seat so my knees were not jammed under my chin, the man reasoned. And with that thought, he pulled over sharply onto the verge bordering Cancun's spectacular lagoon. In the reflected light of a million twinkling luxury suite balcony lamps, he performed an act of vandalism on the Fiat, which would definitely cost him his deposit and possibly send him rocketing to number one on the Hertz blacklist.
"Better," grunted the man, and tossed the driver's seat down the verge. "Hertz only have themselves to blame," he thought, on a reasoning roll. "This is what happens when you insist on giving a toy car to a man of my proportions. It's like trying to load 50-caliber rounds into a Derringer boot gun. Ridiculous." He crammed himself into the vehicle and, navigating from the back seat, pulled into the flow of cars, which, even at close to midnight, were packed together tighter than train carriages. "I'm coming, Juliet," he thought, squeezing the steering wheel as though it were a threat to his little sister somehow. "I'm on my way." The driver of this carelessly remodeled Fiat was, of course, Butler, Artemis Fowl's bodyguard, though he had not always been known by that name. In the course of his career as a soldier of fortune, Butler had adopted many a nom de guerre to protect his family from recriminations. A band of Somali pirates knew him as Gentleman George. He had for a time hired himself out in Saudi Arabia under the name Captain Steele. Artemis had later accused him of having a touch of the screeching melodramas. And for 2 years a Peruvian tribe, the Isconahua, knew the mysterious giant who protected their village from an aggressive logging corporation only as El Fantasma de la Selva, the Ghost of the Jungle. Of course, since becoming Artemis Fowl's bodyguard, there was no more time for side projects. Butler had travelled to Mexico at Artemis's insistence, though insistence had hardly been necessary once Butler had read the message on his principal's smartphone. They had been in the middle of a mixed martial arts session earlier in the day when the phone rang, a polyphonic version of Morricone's Miserere, which signified the arrival of a message.
"No phones in the dojo, Artemis," Butler had rumbled. "You know the rules."
Artemis had delivered one more blow to the pad, a left jab that had little power and less accuracy, but at least his shots were landing on the pad now. Until recently, Artemis's punches were so wide of the mark that in the event of an actual combat, a passerby would be in more danger than any assailant.
"I know the rules, Butler," said Artemis, taking several breaths to get the sentence out. "The phone is definitely off. I checked it 5 times.
Butler pulled off a pad, which in theory protected the wearer's hand from punches, but in this case protected Artemis's knuckles from Butler's spade-like palm. "The phone is off, and yet it rings." Artemis trapped a glove between his knees and tugged his hand free. "It's set to emergency breakthrough. It would be irresponsible of me not to check it."
"Your speech seemed strange," noted Butler. "Stilted somehow. Are you counting your words?"
"That is patently ridiculous, actually," said Artemis, colouring. "I am simply choosing carefully."
He hurried to the phone, which was one of his own design, with a dedicated operating platform based on an amalgamation of human and fairy technology.
"The message is from Juliet,"
he said, consulting the 7-centimetre touch screen. Butler's pique immediately evaporated.
"Juliet sending an emergency message? What does it say?"
Artemis wordlessly handed over the phone, which seemed to shrink as Butler's massive hand enfolded it. The message was short and urgent, 5 words only.
"In trouble, Domovoy. Come alone."
Butler's fingers squeezed the phone until its casing cracked. The first names of all Blue Diamond bodyguards were closely guarded secrets, and the mere fact that Juliet had invoked his name to summon him was an indicator of how much trouble she was in.
"Well, naturally, I'm coming with you," said Artemis briskly. "My phone can trace that call to the nearest square centimetre, and we can be anywhere in the world in just less than a day."
Butler's features belied the struggle between big brother and detached professional that raged inside him. Finally, the professional got the upper hand.
"No, Artemis, I cannot put you in harm's way.
But
no, I must go. But you will return to school. If Juliet is in trouble, I need to move quickly, and caring for you will simply double my responsibility."
Juliet knows how seriously I take my job, and she would never ask me to come alone unless the situation was dangerous. Artemis coughed.
It's probably not too dangerous. Perhaps Juliet is more inconvenienced than in any actual peril. But in any case, you should go as soon as...
He plucked the phone from Butler's grasp and tapped the screen.
Cancun, Mexico. That's your destination.
Butler nodded. It made sense. Juliet was currently with a Mexican wrestling troupe, building a rep for her character, the Jade Princess, and praying for that magic call from the World Wrestling Entertainment Group.
Cancun, he repeated. I've never been. There's not much call for people like me there. Too safe.
The jet is at your disposal, naturally, said Artemis, who then frowned, unhappy with the sentence. Hopefully this entire thing is nothing but a goose chase.
Butler glanced sharply at his young charge. Something was wrong with the boy, he felt sure of it. But at the moment, there was only room for Juliet in the concern for others corner of his brain.
This is no goose chase, he said softly,
then with considerably more force.
And whoever caused this message to be sent will regret it.
To drive this point home, Butler allowed his big brother's side to surface for a moment, and punched a training mannequin so hard that its wooden head flew off and spun on the practice mat, like a top. Artemis picked up the head and tapped the crown half a dozen times, or thereabouts.
I imagine they already do,
he said, his voice the rustle of dry leaves. So now Butler was making agonizingly slow progress through the late-night Cancun traffic, head and shoulders squashed flat against the Fiat's roof. He had neglected to reserve a car, and so had been forced to accept whatever the Hertz lady had left in the lot, a Fiat 500. Tray cool, if you're a single teen, on the way to the spa, but not so suitable for a 100-kilogram hulk. An unarmed 100-kilo hulk, Butler realized. Generally, the bodyguard managed to bring a few weapons with him to whatever party he was about to break up. But in this case, public transport was actually quicker than the foul jet, so Butler had been forced to leave his arsenal at home, even his beloved Sig Sauer, which almost drew a tear. He had connected through Atlanta, and the Marines at Customs would not have taken kindly to anyone smuggling hardware into the U.S., especially someone who looked like he could probably breach the White House with a few belts of ammunition. Butler had been at something of a loose end since leaving Artemis's side. For more than 15 years, he had spent the vast bulk of his time engaged in Artemis-related activities, finding himself virtually alone in business class on a transatlantic flight with several hours of enforced downtime. He could not sleep for worrying about his sister, and so his mind naturally drifted to Artemis. His charge had changed recently. There was no doubt about it. Since his return from saving endangered Morocco last year, there had been a definite mood swing. Artemis seemed less open than usual, and usually he was about as open as a Swiss vault at night. Also, Butler had noticed that Artemis seemed obsessed with the placement of objects, something Butler himself was very alert to as he was trained to see everything in a building as a potential weapon or shrapnel fragment. Often Artemis would enter a room that his bodyguard had already swept and cleared and start moving things back to where they had been. And Artemis's speech seemed off somehow. Artemis generally spoke in sentences that were almost poetic, but lately he seemed to care less about what he said than how many words it took to say it. As the Boeing began its descent into Atlanta, Butler decided that he would go to Artemis Sr. as soon as he made it back to Foul Manor and make a clean breast of his concerns. While it was undeniably his job to protect Artemis from danger, it was difficult to do that when the danger came from Artemis himself. I have protected Artemis from trolls, goblins, demons, dwarf gas, and even humans, but I cannot guarantee that my skill set will save him from his own mind, which makes it imperative that I find Juliet and bring her home as soon as possible. Butler eventually grew tired of the traffic's crawl down Cancun's main strip and decided that he would make better time on foot. He pulled over sharply into a taxi rank and, ignoring the indignant cries of the drivers, set off past the rows of 5-star hotels at a brisk jog. Locating Juliet would not be difficult. Her face was splashed all over dozens of downtown banners. Luchador wrestling, for 1 week only at the Grand Theatre. Butler did not much care for Juliet's picture on the banners. The artist had twisted her pretty face to make her sister seem more aggressive, and her stance was obviously just for show. It may look good on a poster, but it was all wrong and
left her wide open for a hook to the kidneys. Juliet would never approach an adversary in that way. His sister was the best natural fighter he had ever seen, and too proud to ask for help unless there was no other option available to her, which was why her message was so worrying. Butler jogged 2 miles without breaking a sweat, weaving through throngs of revellers until he arrived at the glass and stucco facade of the Grand Theatre. A dozen or so red-jacketed doormen clustered around the automatic doors, nodding and smiling at the crowd hurrying in for the main event. "Around the back," he decided. "The story of my life." Butler skirted the building, thinking that it would be nice, just once, to go in the front door. Maybe he would in another lifetime, when he got too old for this business. "How old do I have to be?" he wondered. "Come to think of it, with all the time travel and fairy healings, I'm not even sure how old I actually am anymore." As soon as Butler reached the back door, he put all other thoughts from his mind, apart from the job at hand. Get to Juliet, find out what trouble she was in, and extricate her with minimal collateral damage. There were still 10 minutes before the show was scheduled to start, so with a little luck, he could nab his sister before the room got too crowded. The only security on the back door was a single surveillance camera. Luckily, the ground was a straight theatre, and not the convention room of a resort hotel, or there would be a cluster of pools at the back door, along with crowds of tourists, a salsa band, and possibly half a dozen undercover private cops. As it was, Butler slid unnoticed into the theatre and simply waved at the camera on the way in, effectively covering his face. Butler did not meet a shred of opposition on his way through the theatre's backstage area. He passed a couple of costumed wrestlers, sharing an electrolytic drink, but they barely spared him a glance, probably assuming he was one of them, big and dumb by the look of him, the bad guy. Like most theatres, the Grand had miles of corridors and back passages, which did not show up on the blueprints that Butler had downloaded on his smartphone from Artemis's Interpedia, which had a dedicated blueprint site containing any plans that had ever been uploaded and quite a few that Artemis had stolen and uploaded himself. After several wrong turns, even Butler's excellent sense of direction was failing him, and the big bodyguard was tempted to simply punch through walls and create the shortest route to where he wanted to go, the performer's dressing room. Butler finally arrived at the dressing room door just in time to see the tail end of the wrestling squad winding their way through to the stage, looking like sections of a Chinese dragon in all their lycra and silk. After the last wrestler slipped through, a barrier of meat and muscle in the shape of 2 enormous bouncers closed across the backstage doors. "I could take them," thought Butler. "That would not be a problem. But it would only leave me seconds to find Juliet and get her out of here. And knowing my sister, she will want to conduct a complicated and ultimately meaningless conversation before she's ready to go. I need to think like Artemis, like the Artemis of old, and play this calmly. Blundering in is likely to get both of us killed." Butler heard the howls and whoops of the crowd as the wrestlers entered. The noise was muffled through the double doors, but clearer from the dressing room. He poked his head inside and saw a monitor bracketed to the wall, displaying the action in the ring. Convenient. Butler stepped close to the screen and searched for his sister. There she was, at the corner of the ring, performing some ostentatious warm-ups that were more for show than actual effect. If Butler could have seen his own normally taciturn features at that moment, he would have been surprised by the fond, almost sleepy smile that lingered on his face. "It's been too long since I've seen you, little sister." Juliet did not seem to be in any immediate danger. In fact, she appeared to be relishing the crowd's attention, raising her arms for more applause and whipping the jade ring on her ponytail around in figures of 8. The crowd loved her too. Several young men waved banners bearing Juliet's image, and a few were bold enough to shower her with confetti hearts. Butler frowned. He would definitely be keeping an eye on those particular young gentlemen. Butler allowed himself to relax a little, a loosening of the fingers that perhaps 5 people in the world would notice. He was still on high alert, but could admit to himself now that his darkest fear had always been that he would arrive too late. "Juliet is alive and healthy. Whatever the problem is, we can solve it between us." He decided then that the most prudent course of action would be to observe from this vantage point. He had a clear view of the wrestling ring, and, if necessary, he could be by his sister's side in seconds. The opening match was started by an old-fashioned ringside bell, and Juliet leaped high, landing cat-like on the top rope.
"Princessa! Princessa!"
chanted the audience. "A favourite with the crowd?" thought Butler. "Of course she is." Juliet's opponent was obviously the villain of the piece, a humongous woman with buzz-cut bleached hair and a costume of blood-red lycra. "Boo!" called the crowd. Like most wrestlers on the luchador circuit, this huge newcomer wore a mask that covered her eyes and nose and was tied at the back with some nasty-looking barbed wire, which Butler suspected was actually plastic. Juliet seemed like a doll in comparison, apparently outmatched. A little of the cockiness drained from her masked face, and she appealed to her corner for assistance, but was met with shrugged shoulders from a stereotypical flat-capped trainer, who could have been recruited from the set of a wrestling movie. "This match is all scripted," Butler realized. "There's no danger here." He pulled up a chair to the screen and settled to watch his sister. The first round was gentle enough on Butler's nerves. Then, in the second round, Juliet strayed a little close to her opponent and was pounced on with surprising speed.
"Ooh!"
cried most of the crowd. "Snap her in two, Samsonetta!" called a few less charitable observers.
"Samsonetta," thought Butler.
"That suits her."
He was not worried at this point. There were at least a dozen ways for Juliet to break Samsonetta's hold, as far as he could see. Most she could do without even using her hands. One would be theoretically possible by combining a fake sneeze with a sudden drop. Butler started to worry when he noticed half a dozen men in trench coats sidling along the far wall towards the ring.
Trench coats? In Cancun? Why would anyone wear a trench coat in Mexico unless they were concealing something?
The picture was too grainy for Butler to garner much detail, but there was something about these guys and the way they moved. Purposeful. Devious. Sticking to the shadows.
"I've got time," Butler reasoned, already putting together his plan. "This could be nothing, but it could be everything. I can't take chances with Juliet's life at stake."
He glanced round the dressing room to see if there were anything he could use as a weapon. No such luck. All he could find were a couple of chairs, plenty of glitter and mascara, and a barrel of old costumes. "I won't be needing that glitter or mascara," thought Butler, reaching into the costume barrel. Juliet Butler was feeling a little claustrophobic in the arms of her opponent.
"Come on, Sam," she hissed. "You're suffocating me."
Samsonetta stamped flat-footed on the canvas, sending hollow booms bouncing around the auditorium, while at the same time making a show of squeezing Juliet's neck.
"That's the idea, Jules," she whispered, her Stockholm accent stretching the vowels. "I whip up the crowd, remember? And then you take me down."
Juliet turned her face to the 3,000-strong crowd, delivering a dramatic howl of pain.
"Kill her!"
screamed the nice ones.
"Kill her and then snap her in two!"
screamed the not-so-nice ones.
"Kill her, snap her in two, and stamp on the pieces!"
howled the downright nasty audience members, usually easily identifiable by the violent slogans on their T-shirts and the drooling.
"Careful, Sam, you're moving my mask."
"And such a pretty mask, too."
Juliet's entire outfit was pretty enough to make her a crowd favourite. A jade, skin-tight leotard and a small eye mask, which was actually a gel pack covered with glitter.
"If I have to wear a mask," Juliet had reasoned, "it might as well be good for my skin."
They prepared for Samsonetta's trademark takedown, an overhead drop helped along by the power of her amazing arms. Usually, if her opponents had so much as a spark of energy left in them, after that manoeuvre, Sam simply fell on them. And that generally did the trick. But since Juliet was the crowd's favourite, the move was not planned to go as usual. A wrestling audience liked to see their hero as far down as possible without being out. Sam advertised the move by asking the crowd if they wanted the body slam.
"Do you want it?"
she shouted, playing up her accent.
"Yes!"
they howled, beating the air with their fists.
"The body slam!"
"Slam!" they chanted.
"Slam! Slam!"
A few chanted other, rougher slogans, but security soon zoned in on them.
"You want a slam? I will slam!"
Generally, Samsonetta would have said, "I shall slam," but Max, the promoter-manager of Lucha Slam, liked her to use V instead of W, wherever possible, as for some reason it drove the crowd crazy. And so she bent backwards and hurled the unfortunate Jade Princess towards the deck. And that would have been the end of it, had not the Jade Princess somehow twirled in mid-air to land on her toes and fingertips. And that wasn't even the impressive part. The impressive part was springing back up again and whipping her head around, so the jade ring woven into her blonde ponytail whacked Samsonetta in the jaw, landing the giantess flat on her back. Samsonetta whined and complained, rubbed her jaw to redden it, and rolled like a walrus on a hot rock. She was quite a performer, and for a moment Juliet worried that the jade ring had really hurt her, but then Sam threw her a secret wink, and she knew that they were still play-acting.
"Have you had enough, Sansonetter?"
asked Juliet, springing nimbly to the top rope.
"Would you like some more?"
"No,"
blubbed her supposed opponent, then decided to sneak another V in for Max.
"I want no more."
Juliet turned to the audience.
"Shall I give her some more?"
"Oh, no," said an imaginary audience. "No more, that would be barbaric."
But the real audience said things like,
"Kill her! Take her downtown!"
Whatever that meant. They were already downtown.
"Show her the pain!"
The pain being obviously more excruciating than just plain old pain. "I love these people," thought Juliet, and launched herself off the top rope for the coup de grace. It would have been a thing of beauty, a lovely double flip rounded off with a nice oof-inducing elbow to the stomach. But someone came out of the shadows and snatched Juliet from the air, tossing her roughly into the corner of the ring. Several other silent, muscled attackers piled on top of Juliet until all that was visible of the girl was one green-clad leg. In the shadows, where he was watching behind one of the lighting rigs, Butler felt a sour ball of fear drop to the pit of his stomach and muttered, "That's my cue," which sounded an awful lot more flippant than he felt. The crowd was still applauding the unexpected arrival of the ninja squad, luchadors, in their trademark black costumes disguised by trench coats, who had doubtless shown up to avenge their master's recent defeat at the hands and feet of the Jade Princess at Quadro Slam in Mexico City. Surprise guests often showed up unadvertised at the slams, but the entire ninja squad was an unexpected bonus. The ninjas were a writhing mass of pumping limbs, each member desperate to land a blow on the Jade Princess, and there was nothing the slight girl could do but lie there and absorb it. Butler entered the ring quietly. The element of surprise was often the difference between victory and defeat in against-the-odds situations, though if Butler were honest with himself, he would admit that secretly he usually felt that the odds were in his favour, even in this case when he was outnumbered 12-1. 12-2, if Juliet was still conscious, which was 6-1, which was virtually even Stevens. A moment earlier, Butler had felt a little self-conscious in the borrowed costume of fake bearskin leotard and mask, but now all embarrassment was forgotten as he clicked his brain into that cold space he called combat mode. "These people are hurting my sister," he thought as a hot trickle of anger cracked his icy shell of professionalism. "Time to go to work." With a growl that was totally in keeping with his crazy bear costume, Butler rolled into the ring under the bottom rope, stepped briskly across the canvas and began laying into the ninjas with blatant economy of movement. There was no threatening monologue, not even a simple foot stamp to herald his arrival, which was hardly courteous. He simply dismantled the ninjas as though they were a Jenga stack. There followed 30 seconds of flailing limbs and high-pitched screaming that would have done hysterical teenagers at a boy band concert proud. And then, finally, Juliet was uncovered. Butler saw that his sister was intact and smiled behind the mask. "Hello there. I made it." And in response to her life being saved, Juliet jammed 4 rigid fingers into his solar plexus, driving the air from his body.
"Oh!"
he grunted, then,
"Whoops!"
which was supposed to be, "What are you doing?" A couple of the ninjas had recovered and tried a few of their stylized moves on their attacker, only to be rewarded with casual open-handed slaps.
"Watch it!"
snapped Butler, drawing breath once more and shooting them the evil eye. "I need a minute of family time." Something flickered in the corner of Butler's vision, moving with blurred, jittery speed. His left hand automatically shot out to grab the jade ring that was braided into his sister's blonde ponytail.
"Wow," said Juliet. "No one's ever done that before."
"Really?" said Butler, dropping the jade ring. "No one."
Juliet's eyes widened behind her mask.
"No one except... brother, is that you?"
Before Butler could reply, Juliet sidestepped and poleaxed with her forearm a ninja, who may have been sneaking up on them, or may in fact have been trying to escape from what had become the ring of real pain, as opposed to the ring of convincingly faked agony.
"Didn't you guys hear this, man? We need family time."
The ninjas shrank back against the rope, whimpering. Even Sansonetta seemed a little concerned.
"Brother, I'm in the middle of a grudge match. What are you doing here?"
asked Juliet. It might have taken many people a few more minutes before they realized something was amiss, but not Butler. Years of protecting Artemis Fowl had taught him to catch the penny before it dropped.
Obviously, you didn't send for me. We need to leave so I can figure things out.
Juliet's bottom lip hung sulkily, transporting Butler 10 years into the past when he'd forbidden her to shave her head.
I can't just go. I've got fans expecting me to do cartwheels and give you the signature move.
It was true. The Jade Princess's camp was bouncing on their benches, baying for Crazy Bear's blood.
If I just leave, there could be a riot.
Butler glanced up at the giant screen suspended from the ceiling and saw a close-up of his own head looking up at the screen, which was enough to give anyone a headache. A voice boomed from 4 old-fashioned conical speakers wired to the corners of the overhead screen.
Who is this guy, folks? Is he Crazy Bear come to take down his old enemy, the Jade Princess?
Juliet stuck out her chin.
Max, always looking for the angle. Juliet, we don't have time for this.
Whoever it is, continued Max, we're not just going to let him walk out of here with our princess, are we, amigos?
Judging by the loud and sustained reaction, the paying customers did not take to the idea of Crazy Bear simply walking out with the princess. The language was florid, and Butler could have sworn that the walls were shaking slightly. Butler took 3 quick steps to the side of the ring and wagged his finger at a little man holding a microphone. He was surprised when the little man jumped up on the table, stamped his own hat, then shouted into the mic,
"You threatening me, Crazy Bear? After all I've done for you, when those forest rangers found you living with the grizzlies, who took you in? Max Shetling, that's who. And this is how you repay me."
Butler tuned out the rant.
"Okay, Juliet, we need to get out of here now. We do not have time for this. Someone wanted me out of the way. Possibly someone who has a grudge against Artemis."
"You need to be an awful lot more specific than that, brother. Artemis has more enemies than you, and you have quite a few at the moment." It was true. The crowd were turning ugly. A lot of it was fake ugly, but Butler's keen eye spotted scores of wrestling fans in the front rows who looked ready to storm the ring.
"I need to make a statement," he thought. "Show these people who's boss. Outside the ring, Jules, right now."
Juliet did what she was told without complaint. Butler had that look on his face. The last time she'd seen that look, her brother had punched his way through the hull of a Somali pirate's stolen yacht, sinking the vessel in the Gulf of Aden.
"Don't hurt Sansonetta," she ordered. "We're friends."
Butler shook his head in disapproval.
"Friends? I knew you two were faking."
Sansonetta and the ninjas were busy throwing shapes in the far corner of the ring. They stamped, punched, and threatened without actually attacking.
When Juliet was safely outside the ropes, Butler turned to his own corner and threw his shoulder into the pad covering the post. The impact rattled the post in its housing.
"Crazy Bear really is crazy," crowed Max. "He's beating up the ring. Are you going to stand for that, ninjas? This man is defiling the very symbol of our sporting heritage."
Apparently the ninja squad was prepared to accept a little defiling of their symbol, if it meant not being attacked by the Man Mountain, who had taken their pyramid apart with no more effort than a child knocking down a house of cards. Butler hit the post again, this time smashing it right out of its socket. He hefted the metal pole, stepped underneath the ropes, and began to twist the ring in on itself. This move was so unprecedented that it was several seconds before anyone could appreciate what they were seeing. In years to come, the maneuver would be known as the Ringer, and would elevate the real Crazy Bear, who was passed out drunk in the back alley, to the status of luchador superstar. Even Max Shetling's tirade dried up as his brain tried to process what was actually going on. Butler took advantage of the stunned stillness to quickly spin the corner post 6 times, popping another 2 supports from their housings. "This is not as difficult as it looks," mused Butler, catching sight of himself on the giant screen. "This entire ring is little more than an inverted tent. A well-fed teenager could pull it down." He gathered the 3 posts in his arms, twirling them deftly, drawing the ring tighter and tighter. A couple of the ninjas had enough presence of mind to skip out while they could, but most stood slack-jawed, and a couple who believed themselves to be dreaming sat down and closed their eyes. Butler nodded at Sansonetta.
"Out you go, miss."
Sansonetta actually curtsied, which was totally out of character, and ducked under the rope along with one ninja who was sharp enough to recognize a reprieve when he saw one. The rest of the crew was pressed closer together as Butler wound the rope tight. Every twist brought groans from the coils of old rope and from the people trapped inside. The crowd was beginning to realize what was happening, and they began to cheer with every twist. Several were gleefully calling for Butler to squeeze the air from the ninja's lungs. But the bodyguard was content merely to crush them together like passengers on the London Tube at rush hour.
and once they were powerless to move, he shuffled them to the side of the ring and planted the pole back in its housing. "I am going now," he said, "and I advise you all to stay put until I'm out of the country, at the very least, because if you don't, I will be very unhappy." Butler did not have the magical power of the mesmer, but his voice was extremely persuasive nevertheless.
"Okay, Bear, take it easy,"
said the only ninja sporting a white headscarf, possibly the leader.
"You're straying way off script. Max is gonna go nuts."
"You let me worry about Max," Butler advised. "You worry about me worrying about you."
The ninja's frown was obvious through the folds of his scarf.
"What? Who should I worry about?"
Butler ground his teeth. Dialoguing was not as easy as the movies would have a person believe.
"Just don't move until I'm gone. Got it?"
"Yep. You should have said that."
"I know."
From a bodyguard's perspective, there were so many things wrong with the situation, the butler almost despaired. He turned to his sister.
"Enough of this. I have to go somewhere and think. Somewhere with no lycra."
"Okay, Dom, follow me."
Butler stepped down from the platform.
"If you could stop banding my name about. It's supposed to be a secret."
"Not from me. I'm your sister."
"That may be, but there are thousands of people here and half as many cameras."
"It's not as if I said the whole name. It's not as if I said Domo..."
"Don't!" warned Butler. "I mean it."
The stage door was a mere 20 meters away, and the familiar rhythms of family bickering warmed Butler's heart. "I think we're going to make it," he thought in a rare moment of optimism. Which was when the picture on the big screen was replaced by a giant pair of glowing red eyes. And although red eyes are usually associated with nasty things like vampires, chlorine burn and conjunctivitis, these particular red eyes seemed friendly and infinitely trustworthy. In fact, anyone who gazed into the fluid swirling depths of these eyes felt that all their problems were about to be solved, if they just did what the owner of those eyes told them to do. Butler inadvertently caught sight of the eyes in his peripheral vision, but quickly tucked his head low.
"Fairy magic," he realized. "This entire crowd is about to be mesmerized."
"Look into my eyes,"
said a voice from every speaker in the room. The voice even managed to invade the cameras and phones of the audience.
"Wow,"
said Juliet in a monotone that did not suit the word.
"I really need to look into those eyes."
Juliet might have been reluctant to do what the silky voice commanded if she'd had any memory of her dealings with the fairy people. Unfortunately, those memories had been wiped from her mind.
"Block the exits," urged the voice. "Block all the exits. Use your bodies."
Juliet whipped off her mask, which was impeding her view of the screen.
"Brother, we need to block the exits with our bodies."
Butler wondered how things could get much worse as hundreds of enraptured wrestling fans surged down the aisles to physically block the entrances and exits.
"Block the exits with your bodies." This fairy was pretty specific.
Butler had no doubt that another command was forthcoming, and he doubted it would be now join hands and sing sea shanties. No. He was certain that nothing benign would issue from that screen.
"Now kill the bear and the princess," said the layered voice,
a few of the layers taking a moment to catch up, lending a sibilant S to princess.
"Kill the bear and the princess. Charming."
Butler noticed a glint of dark intent in his sister's eye as she realized that he was the bear. What would she do, he wondered, when she tumbled to the fact that she was the princess?
"It doesn't matter," he realized. "We could both be dead long before that happens." "Kill the bear and the princess,"
droned Juliet in perfect unison with the mesmerized crowd.
"And take your time about it," continued the magical voice, now infused with a merry note. "Drag it out a little. As you humans say, no pain, no gain."
"A comedian," thought Butler. "That's not Opal Cowboy, then."
"Gotta kill you, brother," said Juliet. "I'm sorry, truly."
"Not likely," thought Butler. On a good day, if he was drugged and blindfolded, maybe Juliet could have inflicted a little damage, but in his experience, the mesmer made people slow and stupid.
A large part of their brains were switched off, and the parts left awake were not going to be winning any Nobel Prizes. Juliet tried a spinning kick, but ended up twirling off balance and into Butler's arms. Annoyingly, her jade ring spun round and clattered him on the ear.
"Even mesmerized, my sister is irritating."
Butler hefted Juliet easily,
then tensed his muscles for flight.
"Kill you," muttered his sister. "Sorry, got her."
Then,
"Fairies? Killing me?"
Was she remembering the Foul Manor siege, Butler wondered? Had the mesmer accidentally triggered recall? He could investigate later, if there were a later for them. Butler had considerable faith in his own ability, but he doubted that he could take on a theatre full of zombies, even if they weren't fleet of foot. "Go to work, my human lackeys," said the voice that went along with the red eyes. "Dig deep into the darkest recesses of your brains, such as they are. Leave no evidence for the authorities." Leave no evidence? What were they supposed to do with the evidence? That question really didn't bear thinking about. Bear ha ha ha, thought Butler, and then, "Jokes? I have time for jokes? Is it possible that I am frazzled? Pull it together, man, you've been through worse." Although looking at the dozens of stiff-limbed insta-psychos lumbering down from the upper levels, Butler could not for the life of him remember when. A pudgy 40-something man sporting an Undertaker T-shirt and a beer hat pointed at Butler from the aisle.
"Bear!"
he yelled.
"Bear and princess!"
Butler borrowed a word from the fairy lexicon. "Darvet," he said.